Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
Happy Throwback Thursday, everybody.
Happy Thursday, everybody.
We are... oh, my God, I can't believe this, Kevin. We're, like, in different locations today.
We are. Rob is shooting on location in Massachusetts right now. Where are you, Rob?
I am specifically located. I am in Plymouth Beach, Massachusetts, which is...
Yeah?
Which is where the the Rock is, the Plymouth Rock.
I'll let you talk.
No. I'm sure you probably have some wonderful things that you want to share with us.
No, I looked you up on the map is all I was going to say. And you're south of Boston. You're just a little south. And I looked you up.
You looked me up on a map?
I Google mapped you. Yeah,
does anybody have a map? Thank you.
I missed you. And so
Kevin.
I know.
Luckily, I know where you always are, so I don't have to worry.
You're in. Remind us what you're doing in the old Plymouth Rock.
I am directing The Drowsy Chaperone at Priscilla Beach Theater, and it is a lovely company. It's very cute and adorable and wonderful, and I'm actually recording live from this cute little guest cottage that they put me into.
Let the record show that I'm watching my friend on Skype, and there's nice white panel painted wood in the back, and it looks exactly what a cottage 30 minutes away from Cape Cod should look like.
I'm rustic now, Kevin. Although it's so funny, I was walking to the post office yesterday, and as I was walking, a neighbor said, "Good morning," and living in New York for so long, I was like, what the fuck do they want?
You got scared.
I got a little nervous, and I hid in the bushes.
You thought they wanted something, and
Pass on a pleasantry. But can I tell you something very exciting?
Yeah.
I had never been to Boston. And today was my day of exploring Boston. I actually explored Boston for the first time. So if any of our listeners are in the Boston area and have any suggestions for me, please let me know. But I did a little Boston tour today.
Oh, the history is so amazing.
Yeah, because growing up in California, you know, most of our history, I hate to say it, starts with the gold rush, which is like the mid-1800s on.
Sure.
So to actually go and see where Sam Adams was buried and where, you know, Paul Revere is buried.
Right, and the Freedom Trail and like
I did all that.
Oh my God, it's so great. Oh, I love it.
With all the history that there is, though, the first thing that I did do was I went to the bar where was the exterior for Cheers and I took a picture. That was a big one for me.
It's like the most cliche thing that you can do.
It really...
And I saw that picture on Instagram and I was like, oh wow, Rob. Wow,
and then I was like, oh my God, there's history here besides Cheers, which was great. So if anyone's in Boston and has any suggestions, please pass them on to me. Hey, I don't know if you saw this, but one of our listeners reached out to us, and it's not my favorite thing today, but I think it's something that everyone should take a look at if you have the chance. Have you ever? I don't think we've talked about this on the podcast. Have you seen Elaine Stritch sing "It's Today" from MAME?
No.
Okay, so very quickly, this was done. I think like
have
a
night.
I don't.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
It's no. I'll send it to you. It's from 1978. This is for everyone. Just type in Elaine Stritch. It's Today on YouTube, and it's her singing the song at like the Royal Variety Arts tribute show. I don't know what the hell it is exactly, but anyway, it is like the most 70s thing you'll ever see. She's wearing like a pantsuit, like a silver pantsuit.
No,
it's so
no.
clear. The no. choreographer has told them every word needs a gesture. And it's very clear that Elaine has not rehearsed separately from the dancers. So it's a very good performance of It's Today. But the one part I want everyone to watch out for is they sort of have reorchestrated the ending of the song to like get you into a kick line. So it's like, da 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 da. It's a time for kick, making Mary. Kick. And the idea is obviously what is supposed to happen when a kick line happens. The audience is supposed to applaud because they're kick lining,
like
right?
It's America's applause sign is what I was taught in college.
Yeah. Would you say it's America's applause sign?
Yeah, the applause sign. It's like an applause sign to America. Like when there's a kick line, you applaud.
That's
yeah.
such a good way of putting it.
That's what my teacher told me.
So let me reiterate this. This was in the UK and they're not applauding. During the kick line. So you can watch Elaine Stritch get really pissed at them that they're not applauding, and she starts pushing and getting angrier at them. And finally, her last "It's today" is shouted at the audience, finger pointing at them. So she's literally like, go and have a good day today. And she just points and yells and screams the word "today." Even Bea Arthur is like, boy, she doesn't want to sustain any notes, does she?
Oh, wow.
So anyway, a listener was kind enough to say, had you seen this? And I was like, I have seen it, but it was so nice to revisit it. So that's on YouTube. Elaine Stritch singing "It's Today." And by singing "It's Today," sort of like soapbox on a, just yelling screaming and screaming. It's like, it's epic theater. It's epic theater. It's the world of Brecht. It.
On a slightly different note, I feel like we must mention Patricia Morrison, who passed away, that we always wanted to talk to. We had mentioned it when we first started out like 2 years ago. But
we were close, you know. Man. We had her phone number. I left a message, and I think she responded back saying, I'd be interested. And then I reached out to her again. I didn't hear anything back. That's, so
yeah,
no, so we lost that one, yeah.
But she was like, what, 103, 102?
103, and I didn't realize this, but maybe you're going to talk about this. If you went onto YouTube, she sang at a Broadway Backwards on her 90, like a couple of days before her 99th birthday, and she sang Brush Up Your Shakespeare.
Yeah. Isn't that great?
I think that's wonderful. So I'm so sorry we lost her, but my God, what a great life she led. And I heard she was active right up until the end. So let us all have that life.
Exactly. I put on my record of Kiss Me, Kate in celebration of her the other day.
Oh, did you really?
Oh, so I'm really excited about have you seen the Gwen Verdon documentary advertisement by the Musical Theater Project?
Yes. I just saw it pop up on Facebook. And very quickly, and you watch the trailer, Kevin – Are you excited by the fact that, like, I think the first three talking heads are three people we've interviewed?
Freaked out. We were in rehearsal at New York Film Academy. We're doing a showcase rehearsal, and I stopped rehearsal because I had to show Mark Price, who I'm working with, and we were like blown away. And I was like, we interviewed him. It was Leroy. It was Harvey Evans. It was Helen Gallagher, who looked amazing.
She looked fabulous in that video.
Yeah, I was the footage alone. I'm just so excited. They're still raising funds, I guess. It's the Musical Theater Project that Bill Rudman, he has that. They put out the Hidden Treasures with like Sheldon Harnick, Tom Jones, and Harvey Schmidt. They have one coming out next month. It's a Harbinger. Ken Bloom of Harbinger, yeah. And the Musical Theater Project is his thing. And he has like a weekly serious satellite thing that you can listen to on the Broadway channel.
But, I am excited.
So excited. I hope they make their money. I hope they get their money. I hope they make this documentary.
So they need money.
Yeah, that's what it says. And I think that's why they dropped this amazing trailer for with this legendary woman. And, you know, Rob, you know, we've talked to so many people that have worked with her. And the one thing we hear over and over again is just how magical and special this woman was.
Yeah, yeah.
There's only so many clips on YouTube you can watch. And I think a celebration of her is in need. And I think that would be welcomed by so many people.
You know, I mean, she was just as iconic in terms of coming up with choreography as Bob Fosse was. And if he wasn't able to find a muse as brilliant as her to execute, and she was also very influential in terms of the choreography that ended up on stage. And obviously, right. I would say he's the most recognizable Broadway choreographer. Would you agree with that statement?
Oh yeah, I think so. To the masses, especially, yeah. Yes.
And actually, it's very interesting because I think in a couple of weeks for our listeners, we haven't released it yet because we're going to have a couple of weeks of our Tony show. Harvey Evans, who's been in tons of Broadway shows. He was in the original companies of West Side Story, or the original Broadway productions of West Side Story and Gypsy and Hello Dolly. My God, the list goes on and on. He has some really great insight into dancing with Gwen Verdon because they danced together in New Girl in Town and Redhead. So listen for that in a couple of weeks because I think that'll also help shine a spotlight on the brilliance that is Gwen Verdon and why she should be recognized as being as monumental as she is.
Yeah. Yeah, what a lady! And check out that we'll post it. It's a great preview of what the documentary could be. I mean, man.
So God, let's get some. It's, you know what makes me so sad is there's so many wonderful projects out there that unfortunately just don't have the funding for it. I mean, we talk about him a lot, but one of our guests who was one of our favorite guests, but who also unfortunately passed way too young, was Rick McKay, who did that wonderful Broadway, The Golden Age documentary series. And he has two more. There were two more films in the can all ready to go that picks up with the end of The Golden Age. And they're not being released because they don't have funding for it. So it makes me so sad when you hear these things are just out. Kay Ballard has a documentary about her that they can't find funding for, apparently. So it's just, it's tough. It's very, very tough. Yeah. So I wish somebody could step forward, a benefactor of some sort, and say, you know, here's, you know, 200,000, finish what you need to finish.
I'm glad it's preserved. I'm glad it's there. I think it will see the light of day eventually. I'm just glad that it has been preserved.
Yeah. And so
I must say, but yeah.
You mean the Rick McKay stuff, or do you mean all this
stuff?
Yeah,
just that, like, Rick, those interviews have been made. Like, it exists. Like, it is there. So I'm just, you know, whether or not we see it anytime soon, I don't know. But
yeah. And God bless Rick, because he was posting a lot of that stuff on YouTube before he passed. And, right. And you know, and so luckily all that's out there. Yeah.
Happy Thursday.
Happy Thursday.
Let's throw it back.
No, I'm so sorry. I don't know. So anyway, send money to these people. They're doing something brilliant and wonderful. Any other big theater news? We lost, like we mentioned, we lost Patricia Morrison.
Yeah.
We've done, the Tonys are coming up, you know, next week. And the week after, we have our wonderful Tony historian, Brian Hobgood, back with us. And we're going to discuss all the best play nominees and all the best musical nominees and all that stuff. And our next favorite things will be our favorite things where they do egregiously overlooked people who should have been nominated for a Tony this year that was not nominated. And then the week after, I think, will be categories that are not in the Tony Awards that should be in the Tony Awards.
Right. And you will hear us again talking the night before in, what, 2 or 3 weeks. We'll be back. And I'll hear about your rehearsals for Jazzy Chaperone in 2 weeks. But I'll...
A wedding, how gay, ting-a-ling, ding-a-ling, ding-a-ling. Thank you. I'll be here all week. I really will be here all week.
I saw it 4 or 5 times. I loved it so much. I love that show. I mean, just like side note, again, I love Jazzy Chaperone.
I love it so much. And the first time I saw it, because I had no idea what this was or what it was about, I have not laughed that hard in the theater.
Oh, my God.
And the music
started. The lights went down and I was like, it's just like.
I lost it. Funny. I thought it was so funny. Just, I think the line that really got me, and I hope I can do it justice the way he does it. And he was like, he goes, can you imagine there was a time that people were sitting in a darkened theater and they thought, what if George and Ira got for us tonight? Or can Cole Porter do it again? And now it's, please, Elton John, must we continue with the charade? I lost it. He was great.
I haven't thought of that. Oh, God, Bob Martin.
Bob Martin's a genius man.
Come back on stage again. I want to see him in something again.
Told you. They brought him back for Hey, Look Me Over at Encores. And I was like, give him more stuff to do. Give him more stuff to do. He was so funny. I don't know if this will ever happen. I would think it would be so fun if there was another record in his collection that he wants to share with us. And so we did like a sequel to Drowsy Chaperone. But with the same cast, it's Sutton Foster and Beth Level and everybody again.
Oh, yes.
So, Bob, come on, please. We want that really badly. Also, things that we want badly, I want your favorite thing.
All right. My favorite thing is something you are very familiar with. This is a first, though, for me. I discovered this favorite thing because of research I did for a guest that we interviewed in the last week. Full disclosure, we interview a batch of people usually on a day. And this was someone we interviewed that day. And in doing research, I listened to this cast album, and we've talked about it. We've interviewed literally 2/3 of the people on this cast album.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
I'm literally not self-serving. I found this cast album, and I finally really, really listened to it. And I'm completely blown away by it, and I can't stop thinking of the songs and how ahead of its time these songs were. What is it?
There I stand. No, here I stand with life ahead of me. Today is the first.
Starting here, starting now.
Can I impress you for a second? I am sitting here doing the Sunday Times crossword puzzle. Somehow the words won't come. Can you figure it me with my splendid vocabulary? Maybe I should play dumb. What's a 5-letter word meaning? Here's an example. 2 up, a Peruvian poison dart. Thank you.
He's literally just, he's not reading anything. He had no idea, you guys. He just is going. Yeah, starting here, starting now.
Very quickly, I may throw one in that I love. Sorry. Please. She carries a torch. This is Lonnie Ackerman. Okay. She carries a torch. Statue of Liberty. StatueoflibertyWhy? I am sitting here doing the Sunday Times crossword puzzle. Somehow the words won't come. Thank you.
So you get it. She loves doing crossword puzzles, but really caused it into a relationship, and yet she can't focus on the crossword puzzle because she keeps remembering her relationship
bonus,
that ended.
Bonus
and
points.
So it brings it all back up again, and she finally has to come to terms with it, and therefore that's why that song was written.
Kevin, bonus points if you can tell me the name of the boyfriend in the number.
Hecky.
You're so good.
His name's Hecky. Because I remember thinking, Hecky? Really, that's guys?
Boat to Bermuda with some ignorant, lousy crumb.
So starting here, starting now is my favorite thing this week. It was a – let me give you a little history of this just briefly. So we were talking to David Shire like you do and he – just see how I did that? He met Richard Maltby. And you guys, if you've listened to the podcast before, you already know this because we've had Richard on at least 20 times.
Richard is one of the very few guests who said, can I come back? I have more stories to tell.
The only guest that ever said that. And we love Richard for that. We talked about Miss Saigon. We talked about his career. He's amazing. Ain't Misbehavin'. And he's a Tony Award-winning director and lyricist. But interestingly enough, they met at Yale and they wanted to be, write Broadway shows. And they graduated in the late 50s. They wrote shows and they came to New York. And you have to imagine New York City at this time, it was the world of the Music Man and it was the world of, well, Hello Dolly was 64. But, it was a show tune era. And these guys were writing a more complex song, and Sondheim was their mentor when they came to New York, but suffice it to say they never had a hit. They wrote a whole bunch of shows, A Sap of Life, Love Match, which you've talked about because you've done a lot of these shows at 54 Below. How Do You Do I Love You, the computer dating musical from the 60s. Can you imagine?
Oh, that got
a musical about dating in the 60s, that was – it just – they just were ahead of their time. I really believe it. And nothing ever caught on. They never had success writing together. Kind of split up for 10 years. They both went their separate ways, found immense success in their own little world. Richard, doing Ain't Misbehavin', being a lyricist. David Shire won Academy Award for the Norma Jean movie, and he was a film scorer. And so then a review was made, and Manhattan Theater Club, MTC, said, hey, can we do a review of your songs, basically, from your shows that never made it? And so they said yes, and Richard put it together. You can listen up and hear about that in the previous episode. But what became Starting Here, Starting Now is these songs. It was they ran for 120 performances in 1977 at Barbara Ann's. I don't know what that – do you know that venue, Rob?
Barbara Ann's. It was a cabaret space. I don't know where it was.
Very small. If you look at the cast album, you can see like the stage is part of like this really dark album, and it kind of is like the silhouette and looks like it's a very small stage. It ran 120 performances. Marjorie Cohen, Lonnie Ackerman, George Lee Andrews. Lonnie and George both were guests on our show. But outside of knowing them and talking to them, and the songs are fantastic.
Yeah.
Completely captivated by them. I've always known a couple of them, like I Think I May Want to Remember Today, but they are stuck in my head. I'm so fascinated by the fact that and even David said this as we were talking to him the other day, that they're little mini scenes. They are meant to be sung as like its own individual play, each little song. And this is before Jason Robert Brown did it. This is before anyone we have of our contemporaries, that all contemporary musical theater does that today. But I want us to channel 1958 and 1960 when Wildcat was on Broadway. And these guys are writing 5-minute songs that were like completely different from what audiences were used to being challenged with. In 1977, I think it finally caught up. And unfortunately, they haven't had a big hit on Broadway yet, but they had Baby and they had Big, and Take Flight was a scene outside. But I just am fascinated by their skills as a songwriting team, and I really love Starting Here, Starting Now. So I think if you got to start anywhere, start there and start with Starting Here, Starting Now. And young actors, there is a treasure trove of audition songs in that.
Yeah, I mean, in full disclosure, when because we interviewed David Shire, and that interview will be posted in a couple of weeks.
This sounds like an ad bite, but I really honestly got completely sidetracked by my research on this album, and I was like, these songs are amazing.
I mean, and so, but one of the things that David was saying to us, if you remember, was, you know, he said, oh, I don't know if we ever really hit it big on Broadway the way we were supposed to. And one of the things that Kevin and I mentioned to him was, because Kevin and I do so much work with college-age students, I don't think you can graduate from a BFA program without having done a Maltby and Shire piece. I really don't think you can. I said, I don't know if you guys realize it, but for a whole generation, you guys are gods.
That's right. That's exactly right. It is a requirement of your education is their material. It is just a hallmark. It is exactly. And that's why it's like, oh, God, I want more. I just bought the Sap of Life of the LP, one of their first shows.
Did you really?
Yeah, there's a demo recording of it. And I bought it from some guy in Florida.
Of course you did.
I'm upset because I want everything. There's not a lot of output. They haven't done a ton of stuff. That, again, they've been so successful on their own. And yet ironically, the one thing that they set out to do to begin with is the one thing that's kind of eluded them. And yet, it's not eluded them because it has changed the lives of countless people who do this for a living and appreciate this art form. And so I salute them. I salute David Shire. And I say, check out Starting Here, Starting Now.
Oh, Kevin, that is so marvelous. I think that's so good. I love Starting Here, Starting Now. I'm so happy you mentioned that.
And I had to look it up because I thought it was a favorite thing like 2 years ago or something.
No, yeah, I'm surprised.
I know you love it and I know you're aware of it, but I never knew.
I mean, I wish, God, and I don't know if this will ever happen, but I so wish that a bunch of those shows that Maltby and Shire did that didn't come to Broadway, things like Love Match, things like How Do You Do, I Love You, get recorded at some point, because I've been very fortunate, I think you have too, Kevin, that we've been able to hear a lot of that score and get it, you know, lingering. But the score is magnificent. I have to tell everyone, How Do You Do, I Love You, I think, has one of the funniest scores from the 1960s that nobody's ever heard. And I think Love Match has one of the most gorgeous scores from the 1970s that nobody's ever heard. And luckily, a lot of that stuff ended up going into Starting Here, Starting Now, yeah.
Maybe four songs from each show. But yes, at least a couple, yeah. But their quality, that's the thing, is the quality is all there. And even when we were talking to David, he was like, oh, yeah, I remember when I wrote Autumn, you know, that Autumn, that song that Streisand recorded. He was like, oh, yeah, I had two or three different versions. And Richard kept telling me, no. Like, I mean, they
yeah.
They were meticulous with their craft, I guess is what I want to say. And that shows, I think, and even the stuff we've never heard, and I can't believe there's material we've never heard before.
Which is amazing. So I think, Kevin, I'm so happy you picked that because it's such a good choice. It's such a good choice.
Yeah. Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
Bravo,
what sir. Is yours today, my friend?
Well, mine actually is something that also when I was researching a couple of things for interviews that I came across and I was like, oh, we should talk about this at some point. And you and I actually watched some of this together. So this is a public access show. Not my traditional public access shows where we're like, what the heck is happening? This was a public access show, which is starting to resurface again on YouTube. So here's the channel you need to go to because it's a channel. The channel is S as in Sam, J as in Jack, B as in Bob, and then here are some numbers. 10014. Once again, that's SJB10014. This person, this channel, is posting a lot of public access episodes of a public access show called... I think this is a good one, Kevin. Kevin's laughing.
I literally just looked it up.
The show was called Emerald City.
Oh, my God.
And Emerald City was a gay-themed public access show in the late 70s hosted by a gentleman named Frank O'Dowd.
Amazing.
Now, the reason that I'm asking you to go to it is while a lot of the public access show was specifically discussing gay and lesbian issues of the time and... what's wrong?
Ben Bagley.
I told you about this. I told you, Kevin. Kevin doesn't listen sometimes. It's okay.
Sorry.
Kevin, stay with me. Stay with me.
Part of it.
No, you're right. Love you more than I. Sorry.
No, I remember now watching the Michael Stewart interview with you. That,
yes.
Out there.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
I didn't want you to be alone.
No one is alone. Truly. So anyway, so once again, so one of the things that I really find lovely about Emerald City, it's two things. One, it's so nice to see. This is post Stonewall pre-AIDS, which is such a small amount of time in the gay community. So it's so wonderful to see people celebrating their identity at this time without fear that something is going to happen to them. But the other thing that I want to talk about is it was filmed in New York City. It was hosted by a wonderful guy and produced by a guy named Frank O'Dowd, who sadly is no longer with us. And the idea was to capture gay and lesbian life in New York City at the time. But so much of it is arts related and so much of it is stuff that we have never seen. So for example, there is a long episode where it's them interviewing Barbara Cook and Wally Harper on her comeback.
Fantastic.
And it's lots of, I don't know how they got permission to do it, but a lot of these episodes are 25 minutes of people's club acts filmed at like Brothers and Sisters and I think places like Barbara Ann.
And very raw. I love very how raw it is. It's not like there's no bells and whistles. They're messing up. They're real. They're not precious about what they're saying. They're just being themselves.
Yes. And it's really, really something fantastic. If you're looking for a place to start in terms of watching these things, the first thing I think we have to start with, like I mentioned, we have the Barbara Cook one, which is marvelous. But the other one that Kevin and I watched together and I think is so fascinating because there's not really a huge documentation of this individual, and that's Michael Stewart, the great book writer who wrote Bye Bye Birdie and Hello Dolly and was in the Sid Caesar comedy room on your show of shows. Mac and Mabel, 42nd – no, not 42nd. 40, no, not 42nd
no,
Street.
No, no, no.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. but this A Score to Sugar. I mean, he wrote the book to a lost Score to Sugar with
this,
Jerry Herman.
So this interview with Michael Stewart.
I'm obsessed with this interview. I loved watching that with you. That was amazing.
And he's being interviewed by Wakefield Poole, who we talked about on a previous episode.
And that rabbit hole.
Because you went down that documentary. but it's so interesting to hear one of the great book writers discuss the process. And one of the things that he brought up that I was just totally ignorant of, and if any of you have a copy of this anywhere, you must tell me and Kevin. We will do anything to get it. That David Merrick had hired Michael Stewart and Jerry Herman to write a musical adaptation of Some Like It Hot.
Yeah.
Dismissed it. And then hired Bob Merrill and Julie Stein and Peter Stone to work on it. And that's the version that we know, although there just was a Sugar news article that came out called Sugar, that now Casey Nicholaw and Whitman and Shaman own the rights to Some Like It Hot and are going to now make a new musical version of it.
But it's not based on Sugar. It's like completely different from that.
It's totally different. It's totally different. So, yeah. But apparently that Michael Stewart wrote an entire script and Jerry Herman wrote an entire score for this Some Like It Hot musical adaptation. And Michael Stewart says on the interview, he goes, it's the best work I've ever done and the best score Jerry Herman's ever done. So where is this score? If anyone has a copy of this score, a bootleg, sheet music, whatever, please send
heard
it to
it.
Heard it. Tell us something. Other people that are on these episodes that pop up, we have people like the graphic artist, David Bird. We have Larry Kurt, the original Tony and West Side Story. We also have, this one's a little tricky for us, but God, I hope we can find a new word. Ben Bagley. Ben Bagley.
I found it. I can't wait to watch it.
Ben Bagley, the great recording producer who did these wonderful, you know, Rodgers and Hammerstein Revisited and Rodgers and Hart Revisited, those albums where he would have people like Katharine Hepburn on there singing, like the most random people singing the most random songs.
I just listened to an album 2 days ago, and his liner notes are his. Make Mine Manhattan, Ben Bagley. The liner notes are hysterical. He's nuts. He's an eccentric. I mean, you might say he was a bit eccentric.
Yes, a wee bit.
And I will post some liner notes sometime so you can see what I mean. Collectors, you know exactly what I'm talking about. I'm obsessed with him because I think he was such a personality that I miss that kind of personality.
Yeah, and it's I think we all miss people, personalities like that. So my thing, as I said, it's called Emerald City. And the people that they interview on there are fantastic. Oh, somebody offered, there's an interview with someone named Marie Blake, who was once Billie Holiday's rehearsal pianist. I'm going to go and start babbling now, but it's really fantastic. Once again, this show is called Emerald City. It's a public access show, not to be confused. I think there was a show on NBC called Emerald City recently. it's not the same thing. And the channel that you're looking at, once again, is S as in Sam, J as in Jerry, B as in boy, 10014, and get lost down that rabbit hole. Just a quick little warning. It depends on, you know, how prudish you are. There's a lot of commercials on the public access show for bathhouses and gay vacations. And
it was the 70s.
You see some rear ends. Whoa, so I don't know if it's something that you'd want to play in a classroom without taking a look at it first. But anyway, it's a wonderful encapsulation of a time that's really, really gone by because, one, the AIDS crisis took so many of the people that are being interviewed, but two, finances and the economy took so many of these great cabaret spaces away from us, so we don't really have a live record of them. So I think it's a great exploration of that. So mine this week is Emerald City Television.
Amazing. Mine is Starting Here, Starting Now.
Guess where I'm going to go, Kevin?
Where are you going to go, Rob?
I am going to do the Sunday Times crossword puzzle. Somehow the words won't come, which I think is great because Richard Maltby told us he's a huge crossword puzzle enthusiast.
Still does them. Still crazy about them.
You know what he was telling me during baby rehearsal? What? He can sit down and look at the Sunday Times crossword puzzle, figure out the answers without writing anything down. In his mind, he sees the answers in the puzzle without writing it down. And then once he's done the entire puzzle, then he goes in and just fills in the answers.
Sorcerer.
He's a sorcerer.
That's crazy.
He is a get away from me, sorcerer. Get
sorcerer
away.
Your sorcery.
Get away from me, sorcery. Richard Maltby, you wizard. but you'll hear more about Starting Here, Starting Now when we listen to David Shire's interview in a couple of weeks.
Indeed.
So we will be back in a couple of weeks doing this because next week and the week after are getting ready for the Tony Awards on June 10th. Oh my God, really quickly, you know what I forgot to tell you? I saw Three Tall Women. It's brilliant. What? It's brilliant, Kevin.
It was special.
It's so good. Do whatever you have to do to get a ticket.
That excited. That's amazing. Okay. It's awesome.
The acting is incredible, but Glenda Jackson. Oh my God. Oh my God.
Oh God. Oh, amazing. Can't wait.
It's going to be, I'm going to be honest with you. I sat in the back. I paid like $150 for my seat. I would pay it three times over to watch her performance again. She is a genius to watch on stage. We all know she's a brilliant film actress. You have to see her on stage if you've never seen her on stage.
Amazing. Amazing.
All right, my friend. I will see you in a couple of weeks, but next week, right. Tony time. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the SUPs. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Suffs celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Suffs has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard. So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.